It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
But we're going to talk about hemp, and I think there's still a question of whether hemp belongs on our table. It must be, because it seems like it's for everything now. Everybody's talking about hemp, and there are farmers that are switching from whatever they're doing, thinking that they can make more money if they get hemp. So it's almost a gold rush about hemp across the country. And I've got somebody right in the middle of it that is joining me today. It's Chris Corder, and Chris is the managing director of HempWave. Chris, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Awesome. Thank you.
You know, we're going to talk about all the things that are going on with hemp, but we need to explain it because, I mean, the way it is right now, all over the country, I'm getting the impression that people, are farmers in particular, are saying, maybe I can grow hemp. Now, again, my impression is it's because what they've been doing is not making as much money as they hope it would. And in fact, there are many farmers that are losing money, and there's areas of the country, there's higher bankruptcies and depression and a lot of issues. So they're desperate to find. So I would imagine if you're in the middle of this industry and you have a company that's in the middle of this industry, you must be running into that. Am I exaggerating, or do you find a lot of people that are anxious to give hemp a try?
We do see a lot of people that are anxious to give hemp a try. However, hemp isn't without its typical issues as any other crop. What we see is a lot of people just wanting to jump into it because the margins on hemp versus a typical agriculture crop like soybean or
corn,
anything like that. The margins on hemp are so much greater. However, the cost of everything is so much more as well. But there's a lot of farmers that are jumping into this, and jumping into this is a great and wonderful thing, and we're seeing a lot of excitement about it. But not everybody's doing it the right way.
Well, you start with the motivation that anybody farming would like to make more money, and so we get that. And in fact, through much of the Corn Belt right now, I understand that it's costing about $700 an acre to get a crop out of corn, at least. And if you get 200 bushels to an acre and the current price is around $3.50, that's just $700 income. And that doesn't count all the rest of the costs that you've got or any kind of a profit at all. So you can understand why they're desperate. And it costs like $400 for, you know, bags of seed there too. And then across the rest of the country, there's a lot of row crops. They're just okay, you know. People don't feel like they can really do very well with them. Here in California, the other crops that have continued to look pretty good are trees. And so there have been a lot of people planting almonds, for example. But it takes 5-6 years before they get any income, too, from, yeah, you know, planting trees. So I have had the impression, Chris, that anywhere in the country, there are land-grant universities right now and extension services that are starting to answer questions or put on workshops to teach farmers how they could produce hemp.
Correct. And we're seeing a lot of other services starting to pick up that conversation as well. As a matter of fact, we were working on a deal with Nebraska Farm Bureau, and they want to be able to offer these types of services as far as agronomy support or seed support or even nutrient support, any type of support to their farmers in Nebraska. Just because there is a lack of education and a lack of knowledge. There's so much information out there that farmers are not completely trusting on everything that's out there. So there's true information and there's disinformation. So we do a lot to be able to give the farmers a lot of truth on what's going on, what their costs really are, and what the dangers they face.
Well, you know, in the United States, at least, there's certain parts of the country that are known for, well, say the Corn Belt. So it's seven or eight states in the middle of the country. Soybeans also extend a lot into the south, and wheat into the northwest. And when you get down on the west coast, we've got all of our fresh fruits and vegetables kind of commodities. Are there regions of the country that hemp is better suited for than others?
I don't think there's an individual region that hemp is better suited for. What we're seeing is different strains, and realistically, it's just too early to tell. But there are different strains and different things that perform better in other areas. Some are better performing in Oregon. Some are better performing in California. Some perform better in Arizona or Nevada. So I think it's just too early to tell right now what is going to be the best. So there's a lot of trial and error.
Well, one thing I would think is, you mentioned like Oregon and Arizona. I would assume Oregon may not need to irrigate, whereas Arizona couldn't grow anything unless it irrigated. Would that be true?
That is correct. That is very true. What's interesting is even if we take the same strains, they are having different CBD, different THC, and different terpene levels inside the same crop from region to region.
Hmm. Oh, wait a minute. Say that again.
With the same crops in different areas. If we were to take a strain like a cherry wine hemp strain.
Okay.
And so if we were to grow the exact same seeds in Oregon and the exact same seeds in Arizona, we're seeing different levels of things that are popping up.
Oh.
And, you know, whether it be different CBD and THC levels or even different terpene levels, which helps differentiate maybe either flavor or smell or something about the individual strain that's going to stand out. So we're seeing different levels of that between the different areas as well.
Okay, this is time for us to explain the acronyms. Because so CBD means what?
Ooh, I knew you were going to ask that too. I can go THC right now.
Yeah, okay.
Hold on one second. CBD.
Well, CBD. I mean, you don't have to spell out the word, but it's an active ingredient, but not so active that it's not like getting high on marijuana.
That is correct. It is more of the calming effect of cannabis. And I say cannabis using more of the genus versus the individual marijuana THC heavy versus hemp CBD heavy. So
marijuana is what you said. It's what do you call that?
Like marijuana, like being very THC heavy. THC is the
THP
is the no C T. C is in Charlie.
Oh, THT.
No C. Tango. Tango Hotel.
If anybody's listening to this, they're going to know I am totally ignorant about it, and that's why I'm asking these questions, because I feel a little ignorant about it. But you know what? I went to the gym this morning. And on the gym office, they had a big poster of all the CBD products that were for sale. And it started with like CBD taffy for $15. And it had a CBD lotion for $90 for sale at my gym. And, you know, these things are popping up all over the place. If you go to, you know, your local pharmacy, you know, they've got now end cases with CBD products that they're merchandising it just within this last, maybe 6 months or so. They're using end caps. I know you've been in marketing before, but the displays, the merchandising showing up in drugstores, I haven't seen it much in supermarkets yet, but I'm sure there are some products in some of them already. bud. It's just popping up all over the place.
They really are. And really what the CBD is like anxiety, cognition. They're really using it. And I think a lot of the stores and what everybody has jumped on board has been more for like pain management, for like a pulled muscle or a strained back or things like that. That's been the main issue that CBD has been used for.
So you rub it into wherever the pain is rather than necessarily swallow something.
So you have two methods of ingestion. You could rub it in like a lotion or a tiger balm or something like that, or you could ingest it.
So if we look at a field, say they're starting to plant them all over, and if we're driving down I-74 between Peoria and Bloomington or something, and you're looking out the window and you're saying, gee, that doesn't look like corn or soybeans, what's different about a field of hemp and how it looks to what maybe the crops that people are used to seeing out their window when they're driving through farm country?
Depending on really how close you get to it and what time of year you catch it in, it might not look any different. It's still going to be the sea of green. Mm-hmm. You're still going to have the very green field. Where it's going to start to differentiate is when it does start to bloom and start to produce flowers. It's going to look a lot different than what your typical crops are going to look like. It also depends on what strains they're growing. Some strains may be taller and more full from a hemp plant, or some strains may be very short and stocky.
So do you plant it in the spring?
You can plant it in the spring, and you can plant it in the beginning of fall. Again, depending on what varieties that the farmer chooses to grow, there is an autoflower variety that is not photodependent, and so it's not going to follow typical life cycles of crops. So in about 3-4 months, it's going to go into a bloom phase, and it's going to start producing flowers. That's different than a photosensitive variety that's going to kind of go with the equinoxes. And so when we start getting less light, then it will start going into bloom. But it's not going to do that before then.
But I would imagine that you can't grow in Minnesota in the winter. I would guess that, you know, as you go in the southern part of the country, that you could be going through the winter, like you're saying.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, correct. And as a matter of fact, we've seen farmers in southern Arizona that have grown successfully outdoor with autoflower, but it was regular photosensitive hemp, but they've used lights. And so big outdoor lights to be able to produce, to supplement natural daylight. And they've had great success doing it.
Now, again, if you plant it, and you plant the seeds, the greens start coming up, and there's a point that they just keep growing and growing and growing. With corn, you used to say, you know, knee-high by the 4th of July, and in the last many years, they've been saying, you know, like shoulder-high by the 4th of July sometimes. But it just kind of steadily grows. And you're saying with hemp, then it reaches a stage, you're seeing this, you're driving down the road, and you see all these greens, and it's the hemp fields. But then it'll reach a stage of flowering.
Correct.
And that's pre-harvest that the hemp plant flowers?
Correct. It changes over from a vegetative state to a bloom phase. And it's typical, if you were to Google hemp or Google any sort of marijuana plant on Google or anything, and you're going to see there's going to be mainly a picture of a leaf, and there's going to be mainly a picture of a flower. I don't know what that flower looks like, but the two are pretty identical, mm-hmm. depending on what strain that you get. And you're going to see a lot of, it doesn't flower like a rose would flower. It flowers, it's very cone like and still stays green. Sometimes it'll turn different colors and have different different hairs or like little crystals as you look at it. Look at it up close, it'll have those on there.
But will it look like flowers from the road when you're looking out at the fields?
No, it won't. It'll look just like a normal plant.
Oh, okay.
You from the road, you probably won't be able to tell the difference.
And then when you harvest it, is it like a combine that goes in and harvest it, like, you know, other row crops or grains?
Well, and that really depends on what the use is of this. So I think this is where a lot of people get tripped up as well, is people want to use machinery to be able to harvest this and do different things with it. It really depends on what your end goal is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the farmer will grow to give smokable flour. And so if things are being done for smokable flour, that's typically an indoor variety. But there has been some outdoor varieties that have been grown for smokable flour. When you go to sell that, they want it very manicured and trimmed. So you're not going to come through with a big combine, chop everything down, chop it all up, and expect to be able to sell flour. So a lot of those cases, there's going to be two methods to be able to do it. Either you're going to hand harvest, which is very labor intensive, or you could come through, cut the entire stalk down, bring it to your drying location, dry it, and then trim it that way.
I see. So you
now
can,
for,
you can
for
smoke,
biomass,
yeah.
You, go ahead, sorry.
No, that's all right, go ahead.
I would say for biomass, you could come through with more machinery and cut the top part of the plant off and being able to dry it that way.
When you call it biomass, it's just the stems and the leaves and whatever, you dry it off, and then that material is going to be ground up somehow and to you know, contribute to what, like a lotion or some other material. But when you're saying the biomass, it's just the plant itself that's going to be chopped up and ground up.
Correct. You'll probably have some stems. I mean, you don't want a lot of sticks and stems in there, but you'll probably have a little bit of them in there. You'll probably have some leaf in there, and it'll be mainly flower. But it will be chopped up, and it will be sold as kind of a mix of greens that'll go to a processor, and they'll extract the CBD out of it.
Now let's go back to the acronyms I was getting hung up on, because between the THC and the CBD, the main difference is that the hemp, the CBD, does not create a high like with marijuana. Is that right?
Correct. That is correct.
And is it genetics and the choice of the variety that makes the difference between marijuana that there would be a high from versus the CBD products that, you know, might have other effects, but it's not the effect of marijuana.
The psychoactive.
Right.
You know, things from THC. That is correct. It is mainly the varieties and the genetics of what they're bred for. Some are bred higher to have high THC. Some are bred higher to have high CBD.
So there's a market anymore.
European varieties.
Right. So there's some states now, obviously, that cannabis is legal and so there are some people that are producing for that psychoactive effect. But then the sheer quantities that we're talking about with hemp is that non-high effect. Now, does sometimes the crop kind of get carried away and it becomes hot, and in fact it goes up some level that there is some psychoactive effect of the hemp that was, you know, perhaps unintended, but it gets at a higher level of the THC in it than what allowed?
Well, I don't think it goes as high to have the psychoactive effect of it. But I think it does go higher than what the state and the federal government would allow.
Oh, okay. So there's limits stated.
And that is very true.
Okay. So there's limits because they're concerned they don't want it to get that way. So they set limits then. Wow.
Correct.
What
Correct.
An interesting product. Now, let's talk to the other end, to the consumer. Do any of the any of these CBD products make their way into the food supply? Is it being added as an additive to food products?
They are being added to food products and are available for ingestion. We are actually working with a couple of companies now that have jelly beans. And so you're able to ingest your CBD via jelly bean. So that one's pretty interesting. But yes, they are working into the edible or making it more ingestible market.
So it's kind of interesting because, you know, you can imagine the old potlucks that people would bring covered dishes to, you know, church or school or something else. And I could just imagine a day that we can say, well, you know, Aunt Sadie's potato salad with CBD. You know, I mean, why not? I mean, it wouldn't be illegal. I don't know whether there's anything in flavors, but if there is the belief that there is a calming effect or a soothing effect or something like this, it's not regulated. I'm not sure if there's any reason that CBD couldn't be, you know, used in dishes like that that you bring to the potluck.
That would probably be a very expensive dish to bring to a potluck, but yes.
Well, that gets back to the sign I saw at my gym that it was like $90 for some bottle of CBD. So, again, with all these products, if it's produced, and it is going to be produced, and the farmers are trying it all around the country, like we said earlier, in large part, it's because they can make more money than the commodities that they've been working with. What's the market like? They got to have people that are going to buy it and process it to be able to sell in all these various forms.
That is true. There is a huge market for it. And I mean, at every step along the way, the market is growing or going through a correction. There was the big green boom for the green rush, I guess, for hemp. So the market is still recovering a little bit from the farming aspect of that. Now there's seed breeders and there's people in greenhouses that are producing clones and seedlings. They're doing very well. The processing labs that are turning the biomass hemp product or the flower product into a more usable form for the commercial industries, they're doing very well as well. Along with these prices, the prices for hemp are a little low right now. So the manufacturers are taking advantage of that. And the manufacturers are doing very well for they're able to buy very good quality CBD and being able to put it into products and being able to pass that savings on to regular consumers.
So if they're doing very well, in part, though, the farmers might have a little bit overbuilt or over-responded before the processing is available. So if the middlemen then are kind of in the driver's seat, at least temporarily, if we get all this produced, and as often happens in agriculture, we don't necessarily have all the markets built out and all the distribution systems built out.
That is correct. And that is part of why we're working with farmers, is to be able to help farmers have that guarantee that we're going to buy their product back. If they grow it, we will definitely buy it back from them. And we give them support to be able to make sure that it is in a form that we need it in, so that they won't get stuck with any biomass, to help correct the industry a little bit.
So could you give me a rough idea of the kind of returns farmers might get? About might be an average price now for hemp?
For hemp?
Well, whatever the products, I'm not sure what a farmer gets a check for when the harvest is over, but could you just, I'm just trying to get some general idea of what that might mean. We said earlier that comparably it's been better than what some of the commodities that they were producing otherwise.
So we've seen farmers per acre get a check for about $25,000.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Per acre for what they produce. A typical hemp plant is going to produce about a pound-ish of hemp biomass that we're able to purchase. And so that ends up being about, you know, $25,000. We're seeing the expenses fluctuate based on different regions that they're in. So California and Imperial Valley tends to be a little bit higher because they're used to the high-value crops, the lettuces, the broccolis, things like that. So it tends to be a little bit higher there to grow than in Nevada or, you know, even Arizona. It tends to be a little bit cheaper in Arizona. But on average, we're seeing about $10,000 cost with plants to be able to grow an acre.
Well, you can see why that gets their attention. A lot of commodities, like we mentioned earlier, are just barely making it right now. And so I can see why it's high on the list. And is there a certain scale that's necessary? Like if you're going to go into this, it's not the kind of thing that you necessarily can get by on 3 or 4 acres to sell to a farmer's market versus, you know, like a lot of the, in the Midwest in particular, you got to have 1,000, 2,000 acres of corn and soybeans. So is there a certain scale that's necessary to expect to have a profitable operation?
What we see and what we suggest with a lot of farmers is being able to start small and don't come completely out of your crop yet, or don't come completely out of what you're typically going to grow just yet. Make sure that you're going to have a successful crop. Start a little bit smaller, maybe 5, 10, 25 acres, whatever you can reasonably justify farming. Because farming hemp is a little bit different than farming the other crops. This crop here will pull up all the soils and all the heavy metals and the nutrients and everything else out of your soil. So it tends to be a little bit different. So we do suggest that farmers do start with something small to be able to test it. But we see profitability at, you know, 25 to 50, even 100 acres. Mm-hmm. It really just depends on what strain that you're growing in and how you're growing it.
Is the fertilization similar that's required for other row crops? Well, they need nitrogen,
I assume.
Almost everything needs nitrogen.
It certainly needs nitrogen, but I think where we start to differ from typical row crops is you do have that flowering phase, that switch from a vegetative growth to more of a bloom type of phase. And I think that's where things start to differ a little bit. There's different, like a pesticide or different methods to be able to deter pests as well. So that tends to be a little bit different. Also, when you start getting into hemp versus...
Can they go back to back on the crops, or do they have to rotate? So a year of hemp and you got to follow it with, you know, clover or soybeans or something else?
So we're seeing about 2 grow cycles before they're going to have to do a rotation. We do advise doing soil samples and plant samples after that harvest to see kind of what's happening with the soils in there. And then also to pull soil samples for a pre-harvest months before you're a pre-planting so that you can see what the nitrogens and what the specific nutrients are in the soil so that we're able to fix them.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, skipping all the way back to the end of the consumers, how about the products? Is there any industry group or council or board or research institutions that are checking the claims out or researching the impact of, you know, different varieties or different production systems on what effectiveness there is of the products, of the CBD products, whether, again, it's lotions, powders, whatever. Is there somebody doing the research to see whether or not it's actually having an impact on human health?
There are a few groups that are doing a lot of research for CBD specific and what it's doing for different health benefits and different strains. There's a CBD, there's CBG now, that there are different cannabinoids, you know, do different things inside the system. So there is a lot of research that's going into the hemp and cannabis market.
You know,
we're very early.
Yeah, but some of the other food products, you have to make any kind of a health claim, you have to get it cleared by the Food and Drug Administration. And so, you know, for example, you can't necessarily just say things are heart healthy unless, you know, there are a lot of different criteria. This seems to be very early in these products, that the CBD type products. Because I don't know how regulated they are yet, because it sounds like the research is still figuring out to be able to say, okay, we've been in a double blind study and, you know, we've had all these people and we've done it a couple years and we've, you know, been able to check and see an impact on whatever it is, pain or nervousness or, you know, something else. There just hasn't been the time to have those lengthy trials yet, I would think.
That is true. That is very true. I know one of the things that we're focusing on very heavily, not even from a food and drug standpoint, is traceability and being able to trace the crops back to the individual farms and the individual growing methods. They do this a lot with strawberries and lettuces, and you see those standards there, but there isn't anything for hemp. And where we're more interested and more concerned is making sure that when we do put out a product or one of our partners put out a product, that it is free from pesticides, especially unapproved pesticides, and it is free from any types of heavy metals. That is very easy to be able to put into a product, especially as far as hemp, and not being able to test for it. Again, this plant tends to pull all of these things out of these soils.
Boy, that is really that's an interesting point, because part of the concern I've had with some products coming out of China was that the levels of pollution were finding cadmium, arsenic, lead, mercury in the vegetables, even vegetables that would have been identified as organic. And what you're saying is recognizing that this plant is very efficient at pulling heavy metals out of the soil. So, it sounds like you're doing the right thing to keep an eye on that and measuring that and being aware of that.
And again, providing that traceability back from the manufacturer all the way to the farm, pulling our soil samples, pulling the results, and making sure that there's unaltered certificates of analysis all the way through to make sure and verify that this is a truly clean product.
That's amazing. I am sure that there's going to be opportunities for people that will try to cut corners. And so knowing good companies that are from the outset following practices that can give consumers confidence and whoever you in turn market to, it's going to be important. So with that, let me just have you explain what your company is trying to do.
As HempWave, we do have greenhouses and are doing our own genetics as far as different seeds, seedlings, and clones that provide to farmers. We also provide the opportunities to do a joint venture type of contract to be able to make their dollars go further, make the farmers' dollars go a little bit further and just help them get a little bit more, you know, the best bang for their buck. We are also offering a guaranteed buyback program, which is pretty phenomenal for this type of industry. And if you purchase any product from our vendors or from us that we guarantee to buy the biomass back with certain, you know, with certain qualifications that they're not going to have heavy metals or that's not going to be a particularly hot or THC high crop. We also do provide agronomy support for hemp specific, just to make sure that you are getting the best grow and the best answers to your questions So doing things like soil sampling, doing things like plant sampling, and then showing you and showing the farmers what it really needs to be able to get the best crop out of it.
Well, if farmers want to know more about this, what's your website?
The website is hempwave.com.
Well, I've been contacted, it seems like, a lot lately from people that are getting into hemp and suggesting they be on the podcast. And actually, I got back to you guys because I looked on your website and I thought you had about the best Q&A section I've seen. And this I would include for consumers, whether or not they're going to be farming. You just explain a lot. You could tell from some of my questions I haven't learned as well as I should have, but you do a really good job. And it's only a matter of time that we're going to be driving down the country roads and seeing more of those plants and wondering what they're all about. So I appreciate your taking this time with me to explain to our listeners about this whole hemp phenomenon that's taking place. So thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Well, I appreciate you having me and giving me the opportunity to be able to explain it.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.